Jim, you look like you have a question.
Okay, say you're, oh, you are free. Say now.
Hey, you're free. Let's just pretend, yeah.
Okay, we'll go. Anyway, say you decided to get married now.
You mean decided to abandon my vows and...
Vows and marry
yeah.
A female.
Okay.
Now, how would you stand in the church? Why? Are you gave up the one.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still... You're Catholic. Are you still being a Catholic? Do you still have...
Well, there, yeah. There are ways to do that. The question is, if a priest leaves and gets married and just abandons his vows and runs off and gets married. Well... Let me ask you this. I mean, do married couples get civilly divorced and remarry outside of the church and abandon their vows and pretend to take other vows? Absolutely, they do. Now, I'm not saying that doesn't make it okay. I mean, two wrongs don't make a right, right? But yes, these things happen. Just as married couples will sometimes abandon their vows and decide to no longer live them out. Despite the fact that God is giving them all the grace and strength they will ever need to live those vows. So too do priests sometimes. It's sad and unfortunate, but yeah, it happens. Now, there is a way that a priest can petition, a priest or monk or nun or anyone can petition the Holy Father to be dispensed from their vows. And if you're dispensed from your vows, then you're in good standing with the church, and then you can get married in the church. But, remember what I said about the ontological character, you're still a priest. There is no such thing as unordaining someone, just as there's no such thing as unbaptizing someone or unconfirming someone. I mean, if someone's baptized and then they renounce their faith and become an atheist or become a Wiccan or something, they still have that character on their soul. And should they ever revert to Christianity, we don't rebaptize them. We say, well, yeah, you ran off and did all sorts of Wiccan stuff for a while, but you still have that character on your soul. Same with the priesthood. This is why a priest who has been dispensed from his vows is actually required. Part of the being dispensed from your vows is that should you ever be in a situation, an emergency situation where someone is dying and needs absolution of last rites, you can still do it. And technically, you could do any of the sacraments. I mean, a priest who's been kicked out of the priesthood or a priest who's been dispensed from his vows and left the priesthood, you know, being in good with the church, he can still celebrate any of the sacraments validly because he's still a priest.
Okay, then. Why can't you have mass? Okay, you're saying he can do all these things of emergency.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can he still, in case of emergency, have a mass?
Well, would it be valid? Yes. Because he has that character on his soul, and so for the rest of eternity, he's a priest. Just as for the rest of eternity, you're baptized and you're confirmed, right? And you have those graces on your soul. So yeah, he could. Now Rome would never allow that. And
so he's going against the law of the church then.
To say mass. After he's left the priesthood, yes.
Right, he's married.
Right. Now your question was, would it be valid or would it be okay with the church? Well, it would be valid, but it would not be okay with the church. Well, for instance, I mean, again, a parallel example, you know, if someone... Yeah, yeah.
And he got married.
Yeah. Well, there's a little bit more. Yeah, there was that priest in Florida, Father QTA or QTA, who decided to abandon his vows and hook up with this lady, and he did not even think to, I don't know, fly to California, get out, if you're going to cheat, go cheat somewhere else. You know, like, he hooked up with this lady, like, on the beach in his parish property. Like, how stupid do you have to be? Anyway, so he does this, and then decides, oh, I've fallen in love, and blah, 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 blah. And goes and becomes an Episcopalian priest. They'll let you do whatever you want. We don't even know what they believe anymore. But, we have married couples who abandon their vows and go and get civilly married without an annulment, you know. So yeah, it could happen. If a priest left the priesthood, well, you know, an even scarier situation was a bishop. This happened a few years ago. Some archbishop in Africa got either brainwashed, or maybe he wasn't brainwashed, maybe he was just an idiot, but he got hooked into that Reverend Moon thing where they do those mass weddings, the Church of the Unification or whatever, this Korean minister who performs these like weddings 100 at a time, like in a huge ceremony. So this Roman Catholic archbishop, and he, you know how this guy Reverend Moon just like pairs you with people. So he had hooked him up with this like Korean acupuncturist, and the two of them were married. So as soon as Rome found out, they flipped, and he was laicized instantly. And of course, told like can't celebrate any of the sacraments, blah 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 blah. Anyways, finally, right before John Paul II's death, he actually recanted everything and went and personally apologized to John Paul II. And John Paul II, of course, accepted his apology and offered him a life of penance in a monastery to go and he's not going to return him to active ministry, but say, you know, why don't you go live the rest of your life in this monastery as a bishop, you know, and think about what you've done, you know. Pray and, you know, but returned him to full communion with the church. And then, after that, he left again, found this Korean acupuncturist, hooked back up with her, and now he's running around ordaining people bishops and priests. And he's essentially started his own church, and there are theological academic debates as to whether or not those kinds of ordinations would be valid, because in one sense, if he's a valid bishop, then he is able to confer any of the sacraments. But on the other hand, is he really intending to celebrate the sacraments as the church celebrates the sacraments if he's just going to go and ordain anyone? So you could make a strong case that those ordinations would be invalid. But some people would say, well, they could be valid. I mean, he certainly ordained many other bishops and priests while he was in communion with the church. And now that he's broken that communion, you know, who knows?
Which brings up a good point, Father. The Anglican Church,
right?
They still have bona fide bishops, right?
No, not at all. No, in fact, supposedly the word void, did you guys hear about where the word void was invented? Supposedly it was invented by, I think it was Pope Leo XIII, who when asked to make an official declaration on the validity of the Anglican orders, actually said that they were, quote, totally null and utterly void. Yeah, so that's pretty clear. But now this is the same thing. This is the same question. So when those first bishops broke off under Henry VIII,
right.
You know, one day they were Catholic bishops, they signed this thing that says we don't recognize Rome anymore, and now Henry is our supreme head. Now, the next morning they woke up, are they still bishops? Yes. And they are still bishops right now, wherever they are, heaven or hell, or purgatory. But then that raises the question, well, the people that they then ordained, are they valid bishops? Well, number one, if you include any women in there, then no, because they can't receive the sacrament. But even for a long time, when they didn't ordain women, I mean, the Anglicans didn't even start ordaining women until the 80s, 1980s. But the problem becomes if you start introducing defects of the intention, you know, because at the same time, remember, they were being influenced by the Lutheran theology that was coming out of Germany and the Calvinist theology coming out of Switzerland. And that theology said that there was no such thing as a ministerial priesthood, that there is one priesthood and it was baptism and that was it, and that those people that we call priests are really just deputed by the community to lead them in worship, but that there is no change on their soul, that there is no such thing as the priesthood. And so if you've been infected with that kind of theology, and then you go and try to ordain someone, well, what is your intention really in ordaining them? Or do you even, if you don't even believe in the ministerial priesthood, how could you intend to ordain them a ministerial priest? You know, intention is very important when it comes to the celebration of the sacraments. You could do all of the right things and say all the right words, like let me give you a parallel, with confession. Someone comes and confesses their sins to me, and I say the prayer, and I wave my hand, and I do everything else, but my intention is not to actually forgive their sin. If my intention is, yeah, you know, whatever, I, you know, I don't even believe in the sacrament. I don't, or if I'm withholding my intention, like, no, I do not intend to absolve your sin. Even if it's just a mental reservation, that sacrament's invalid. If I'm trying to say mass and I take the bread and it's legitimate matter, it's real bread, it's not, you know, something else, it's real bread, and I say the words, this is my body, my intention is, I do not intend to confess the Eucharist. Well, then there is no sacrament. So, I mean, intention is very important in the celebration of the sacraments. We have to have the proper intention. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to understand the theological depth of every single sacrament you're celebrating, but it means that you can't have an intention contrary to what you're doing. Let's use baptism. One of the reasons why the church has had to rebaptize, well, it's not even a rebaptism, it's baptism for the first time, certain Protestants that come in is because the intention was defective. They were using water, they were using the Trinitarian formula. Now, you have other Protestants who do not use water and they do not use the Trinitarian formula, and that's clearly invalid. You know, if you're not using water, if you're using Coca-Cola, or if you're not using the Trinitarian formula, but you're saying, I baptize you in the name of Jesus Christ, or in the name of Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, or whatever, that's not valid, right? But even those Protestant denominations that use water and that use the Trinitarian formula, if their intention is lacking, if the intention of the minister is, you know, I don't really intend to, you know, configure this person to Jesus Christ. I just intend to mark them and make them special and set them apart. I mean, that's why the church has had to say we need to baptize, because that's not a valid. If you have an intention contrary, and we've had that problem with certain denominations, and you'll see it on the certificate itself. There's one person whose wedding I'm getting ready to do, and the certificate says something like, this person received obedient baptism, not for the forgiveness of sin, not to do this, not to do that, but simply by the command of Jesus Christ, blah, 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 blah. And I thought, well, okay, obviously your intention is lacking. Even if you did use water, even if you did use the Trinitarian formula, that's not valid. And if such a person were to become Catholic, we would baptize them. So intention is very important.
However, how would you answer someone that said to me, the main reason why priests are not allowed to marry is that the church would have to, they pay a single man a sum of money for a year.
Right.
The man and the wife and children
have to
pay him a lot more. And that's a consideration.
Sure. I think it's a weak argument, number one. But I mean, yeah, people will try to argue anything. Yes, would it cost more to pay for an entire family instead of one person? Absolutely. But again, I didn't take a vow of celibacy just so that I could save the church some money. You know what I mean? Or just so I would have extra time. Or, you know, I took a vow of celibacy to have a bold witness to anyone I've ever run into. He says, wait a minute, you don't have sex, you're not married, and you're normal? You know? Like, yeah. And I'll have a scotch and a cigar with you as well, yeah. But yeah, people will say stupid stuff like that. Would it cost more? Yeah, it would cost more.
It costs them a lot more, really.
Yeah.
You're
educating children. Sure. Now again, these are nice side effects, if you will. Like, yes, it is nice that I do have more time, but that's not why I'm celibate. And yes, it is nice that the church does not have to pay for a wife and kids, but that's not why I'm celibate. So yes, does that help? Sure, but that's not why a priest takes a vow.
Well, the Anglican pastor in Bladensburg, when that community is going to come into the church,
right,
he's going to have to be reordained?
Yes. And it's not reordained, it's ordained.
Well, not from his standpoint.
No,
it was ordained by his bishop. I mean, it was ordination to him.
Right, although he has come to renounce that, yeah. Because
so he'll have to go back.
He has to be confirmed, too, actually.
Okay.
In fact, I was looking at my calendar just the other day. This is going to be a huge event, by the way. I want to make sure I'm there, because this is going to be, the angels in heaven are going to be rejoicing when this happens. But it's October. On Sunday, October 9th, the entire parish is being received into the Catholic Church.
Wow.
Cardinal Wuerl is going to go down and confirm all of them.
Wow.
Because, again, they've already been baptized, so they have a valid baptism. And they were confirmed, but not by, you know, confirmation requires a valid priesthood. They don't have a valid priesthood, so none of their confirmations were valid. So they have to be confirmed. And then this priest is going to be ordained a deacon and then ordained a priest. And part of his coming into the church was recognizing and accepting, and yes, this takes a great act of humility, but to be able to say, I've come to realize through a study of history, through a study of sacramental theology, that my own confirmation and ordination was invalid. So it's not a reordination, it's he is being ordained now. As far as I know, he's the pastor, and the whole church is, and this is just one of many. I mean, this is the first. There are flocks of parishes that want to come in, which is.
It's going to raise that issue again that he raises about having a family, because everybody's
right.
got a family.
Right.
I mean, Scott Hurd is
right.
already a priest in the diocese and has a family, but he doesn't
right.
have a parish.
Now, I think, you know, from a financial point of view, if I had to guess, I mean, their parish, the Anglican parish of St. Luke's, is already used to paying him whatever they're paying him to support his wife and kids. So I imagine they're going to continue to pay him the same thing now that they're all Catholic. You know what I mean? So, and you know what? I mean, where there's a will, there's a way. I mean, if your options are raise more money so that we can pay our priest, or if we don't have a priest, I mean, I think a parish would be willing to do what they need to do to have a priest, you know.
Under the same rules as other
priests,
that when the bishop says, you move, you move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He would be...
And he'd be uprooting the wife and kids, yeah. Now, the bishop also doesn't do this arbitrarily. I mean, the bishop would keep that in mind and say, well, when I move Father so-and-so, I'm going to be moving his wife and kids as well. So he might not be as willing to move Father so-and-so. I mean, I would not be surprised at all if this priest ended up staying as pastor of this church until he dies or until retirement, you know. I can't imagine that Archbishop Cardinal Worrell is just going to kind of throw him into the regular rotation of priests, you know. And given this guy's particular situation, you know, and the fact, too, that, you know, one of the conditions that our Holy Father laid out in that document that allowed for the mass reunification of Anglicans was recognizing that they have kind of developed their own liturgical tradition, that they're going to be able to continue. So even though they're going to be fully Catholic, they're going to be 100% Catholic, their Mass is going to be not the Roman Rite, which is what we celebrate, but the Anglican Rite. Unofficially, that's what it's called. It's not technically called the Anglican use of the Roman Rite, but it's a different-looking liturgy entirely. So they're going to continue to celebrate that. Now, it's 100% Catholic Mass, and they are 100% Catholics. They're not Roman Catholics, but like the Eastern Rites as well, they're not Roman Catholics. They're Byzantine Catholics or Coptic Catholics or whatever, and they're still Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
Or retires.
He passed away or retired.
Mm-hmm.
Does the Archbishop have the right to appoint someone?
Yeah, although one of the other things that our Holy Father laid out in this document was actually the establishment of their own Anglican use seminaries. That would be Catholic seminaries. And he even left open the option of some of their priests being married, since that has been part of their tradition for 500 years. So the way the Holy Father has envisioned it is that they're basically going to become dioceses unto their own. So again, it's very similar to how we have Eastern rites. So for instance, one of the Eastern rites is the Ukrainians, right? The Ukrainian Catholic rite. Now the Ukrainians have four dioceses in this country, an archdiocese, they call them eparchies. So they have an archeparchy of Philadelphia, or Pittsburgh. I think it's the archeparchy of Pittsburgh. And then they have three other eparchies. And basically the entire country is covered by one of those four eparchies, one of those four dioceses. So if you're a Ukrainian Catholic, wherever you live, that's the Ukrainian diocese that you fall under. So even if you live in La Plata, Maryland, you don't belong to the Archdiocese of Washington because we are a Roman diocese. You would belong to the Ukrainian diocese that covers La Plata. So every point X on the planet is covered by a diocese, and some of them are covered by multiple depending on what rite you are. So if you're a Ukrainian Catholic and you live in La Plata, you actually fall under the Eparchy of Passaic. Well, that's the Byzantine Eparchy, that's not Ukrainian. But anyways, you see the point. You have your own bishop and your own seminaries and your own diocesan offices and your own everything. You're 100% Catholic. You're in union with the Holy Father. You're 100% Catholic. They believe everything our catechism says, and we believe the same thing. But they're not Roman. And that's essentially the structure that Benedict has set up for the Anglicans, is that they would basically have their own dioceses. So St. Luke's is going to come in now, and Washington Archdiocese, as a Roman diocese, is going to kind of look over them in the beginning years, but then the idea is that they're going to have their own diocese, essentially, which is, they're going to call it an ordinariate. It's going to be headed by an ordinary who is basically their bishop, and they would, in theory, have their own seminaries and train people in their particular traditions, and when this priest retires and dies, someone else would be there to replace them. I mean, just as when I retire and die, there are other Roman priests to replace me. But I mean, at the end of the day, a priest is a priest is a priest. I mean, I could go to a Ukrainian church and celebrate Mass, and it's still Mass. It looks much different, you know, but it's at the end of the day, it's Mass is Mass, right? So, or I can hear their confessions, and I'm still giving them a valid absolution, or anoint them, or whatever. So that's the cool thing about the different rites, is that that's part of why I wish that we could expose people more to the different Eastern rites, because there's a beautiful tradition in all of them. I mean, just to see the way the Mass is celebrated in the Eastern rite, I mean, it's amazing. It's nothing like what you've ever seen before up here, you know.
Smoke
and bells, and some of you have noticed I have a bit of a Byzantine flair to my own liturgical preference, which is why, like, that thurible I have that has the bells on it, that's from a Byzantine supply store, Byzantine church supply store, you know. And I kind of like the little Byzantine flair in my vestments. That's why I like the shiny vestments and not just the plain blah vestments.
How many Anglican bishops came over in
England? So far it's been four. And keep in mind, this was a big deal. I mean, they were, some of them were retired, some of them were heading dioceses, and they said, I'm done. In fact, there was one in the United States, a bishop, a few in the United States now, two or three bishops of active Episcopalian dioceses who said, you know what, I've had enough. And they're going to be ordained priests. Some of them have been ordained priests already. In fact, one of the ones in England was, they were all ordained priests, and they weren't ordained bishops, but they were basically given all the permissions to dress and act like bishops without actually being bishops. So one of them, all three of them, I remember, they were ordained after me, and I thought, man, these guys have been priests less than I have, and they're wearing mitres and carrying croziers, and, I mean, now they were Anglican bishops for 30 years, so they were used to that. So that was a concession that we gave them, that you're not actually going to be a bishop. You are actually going to be a priest. You're going to be a real priest now, what you weren't before, and we're going to let you dress like a bishop. You're not actually going to be a bishop, but we're going to let you dress like a bishop. So I remember seeing that on TV and thinking, man, this guy's had three masses in his life, and I'm up to 500, and here he is, mitre and crozier, you know. So.
How is that?
It'll be interesting. Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be very interesting. He's asking how the whole hierarchy, two different hierarchies, essentially. Again, my thinking, I wrote a paper for the seminary on this particular topic because I suggested and I argued in my paper that basically what our Holy Father was doing was establishing a new rite. Not an Eastern rite, a Western rite. But like, for instance, the Roman rite is not the only Western rite there is. When I was in Toledo over the summer on my way to World Youth Day, they have the Mozarabic rite, or the Mozarabic rite, however you pronounce it, which is a particular usage of the Roman rite that developed in Toledo with influences from the East. And so it looks kind of like an Eastern rite, but it also looks like the Roman rite, and it's a completely different rite. Everything is in Latin, not in Greek or Ukrainian or Old Church Slavonic like in the East. So it's a Western rite, but it's not Roman. And so what I argued in my paper was that basically the Holy Father had established yet another Western rite. Because sometimes we think, you know, in the West there is just the Roman rite, but there's not. There was a Gaelic rite that developed in Ireland, the Mozarabic rite, the Gallican rite in France. A lot of them have died out, but these were all different ways of celebrating all of the sacraments, not just Mass. And so I think juridically it's kind of going to become like what we have with the Eastern rites. Like I said, if you're a Ukrainian Catholic and you live in Lapleta, you do not fall under Cardinal Worrell. You fall under the Ukrainian eparch of this who covers this area, which happens to be up in Passaic. You know, so juridically, I think you have these different hierarchies. But at the end of the day, everyone falls under the Pope, so that's what makes everyone Catholic. Yeah. Well, what I'd like to do, I don't know how feasible this would be to do, and I haven't even run this by the pastor. This is like very far in the back of my head, just something I'd kind of like to do at some point, is actually to get some of my Eastern Rite friends I know to come here and celebrate here the Eastern liturgy. It would be difficult to do, but we could do it with our sanctuary. I know we have to set up a bit of an iconostasis, but we could do it. So, yes.
Did I understand you say ontological before?
Ontological, meaning at the level of your soul, that that the effect of baptism, confirmation, and holy orders, it changes the very being of it changes what you are. It's and that's why I talked about as well about how our sex is not just body deep, so to speak, but soul deep.
In the medical world, there's a whole world full of oncologists.
Oncologist, yeah.
And I belong to the Oncological Drug Advisory Committee for the FDA.
Oncological.
Oncological.
Not ontological, yeah.
O-N-C.
O-N-C, yeah.
O-N-G-Y.
Yeah.
But it struck me how similar that is.
Yeah. Well, the etymology, I'm trying to think, the etymology of the
Oncological, O-N-C-O-L-O-G-Y.
But this is ontological, yeah, O-N-T.
O-N-T.
Ontological,
okay.
Not oncological. Yeah,
right.
I'm trying to think of it because it sounds the same, but this is ontological. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, at the level of your, it's a Greek word. I'm trying to think of the Greek word. I can't. But it means at the level of your actual being.
I think there's a similarity.
Yeah, there probably could be etymologically. Yeah.
The ontologist. Anybody
that has
cancer knows who's an oncologist.
Sure, yeah. Any other questions? The ontological character, why the priesthood is reserved to men, celibacy. By the way, the other thing I was thinking when I mentioned the abbesses before, have you seen, I think it's in The Sound of Music, it's one of the opening scenes, I think, where the abbess is presiding over Vespers in her abbatial church, and she's up there with the pontifical gloves on, and they've carried the mitre behind her, and she has the crozier, and even at the end she gives the blessing, and all of the nuns, you know. I mean, talk about, people say, oh, you know, that's, you know, Protestants don't have that, and I think that's why they have this idea of women need to be able to be, you know, priests. You know, again, it comes out of this whole idea that unless we're the same, we're not equal. Unless I can do everything you can do, we're not the same. We're not equal. So, any other questions, comments, concerns, disagreements, discussions? Okay, so continue to enjoy your coffee, and I'll leave this, I guess I'll leave it up here.